All right, welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning, good morning. Today is January the 4th, 2025. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. I hope it's great wherever you're at. New year, first podcast, I guess, of the new year. I don't think I've done one yet in 2025, so happy new year. Happy holidays. I hope everyone had a great holiday, safe, spent time with our families or whatever it is. I just hope it was great for everybody. And I hope everyone's excited for the new year. I am. My only hesitation with being excited is that I'm another year older. And unfortunately, I'm at one of those ages where I just seem to kind of look, you know, I'm not supposed to, right? Stay in the day, but man, you know. I'm not 30, right? I remember when I turned 30, I'm like, I'm just 30. What's the big deal? And then I remember turning 40. I was like, 40. But 50, 56, man. I don't know. Thinking about the end for some reason a lot. And I shouldn't be, but it's definitely something that I think about sometimes. And so I don't want life to go by too fast, but I'm excited for a new year. The last few years, I'm not going to get political, but they've been interesting. So I'm hoping with some new faces and some new ideas, we can start doing some new things and hopefully get back on track to, you know, good times to come, right? Good times to come. If you have been happy with the last few years, then, you know, that's good too. But I'm excited. New things coming down the horizon. I've had a lot of stuff going on. I don't know why I haven't done a podcast. I guess I've just been busy. My son's been down again, so... it shouldn't matter that I do this podcast. He knows I do this podcast. I've done lots of podcasts. I've had different podcasts that he's even been part of, but I guess maybe not to bother him or something, but I don't know. But he went back to school, so I got my office again, so I can come up here and chat out some thoughts and see if I can work it out. But yeah, I excuse me. I went to a meeting last night. And, you know, a buddy of mine spoke, and he, you know, he did a great job. But one of the things he said is that he is that real alcoholic. And then a couple people shared, he had a great share. And then a couple people shared that they were truly real alcoholics. And I was like, what am I? Right? What am I? And, you know, I guess it really comes down to defining what an alcoholic is. And, I know when I first came into the program, I felt like I was an alcoholic just because I was in AA, right? Just because, you know, and I've said this before, Alcoholics Anonymous made me an alcoholic. You know, prior to that, I just drank a lot. And, you know, there's some different readings, there's some different parts of the big book where they talk about, you know, four types of alcoholic. And, you know, the kind of alcohol or the kind of drinker I was that I would usually wake up or come to, right, full of shame and guilt, and I would go through the day, and through the day, starting off the day, of course, not going to drink tonight, right, that was terrible last night, let's not do that again, we'll take a break tonight, and, you know, by lunchtime, you know, possibly thinking that I might have a beer or something, and then by the time I got off work, you know, deciding, yeah, well, we'll just do beer tonight, and then by the end of the night, being back into the vodka. And doing it all over again, day after day. You know, if I skipped a day of drinking, it was because I really must have had a rough night or got in some trouble or went to jail or something. But, you know, it took a lot for me to take a break. And but I always had that sort of the break from the day or break in the day. You know, I would definitely wake up buzzed. I would definitely wake up under the influence. But, you know, throughout the day of working, I used to work on a golf course. So I was doing a lot of physical labor and out in the heat and, you know, just kind of working it off. And then by the end of the day and then towards the evening, you know, started up again. But, you know, I have a friend right now who is a very close friend. I've talked about her on this podcast before. I will not say her name, but she's somebody that I, you know, I'm good friends with. I've known for 20 years. Did not drink the way that she drinks now when I first met her. But over 20 years, she has evolved into a person that is a different type of alcoholic. And I don't know what numbers they are, but she is the kind of alcoholic who, when she starts drinking, she just does not stop. And she drinks and she drinks and she drinks, and she can't go to work and she can't function and she can't participate in life. She just drinks and she drinks. And I've never, ever met anybody like that, right? I've met a lot of people that party, right? I've met a lot of people that party and somehow get themselves in a jam. But I've never met a person that just drinks all the time. And it's really rough. I talked to her one day, and I have talked to her in the past before about recovery. Her mother is a good friend of mine, and she's like, you got to help her. You got to help her. And I go, I don't know what to do, right? I do not know what to do. It's like literally talking to a devil. And, you know, I talked to her the other day, and she said, why would I want to get involved in a program that all you do is think about yourself? Coming through, Killer Dwarfs. Yeah, it's a great question. Why would I want to be involved in a program where all I do is think about myself? And when she told me that, drunk, of course, I was like, I was sort of stumped me. Because, you know, when I think about it now, and I shared this in a meeting, that's what this program is, man. It is a lot of self-reflection. In fact, I spend my day all the time thinking about myself, right? Constantly evaluating myself. And which is interesting because, you know, ideally through the steps of this program and working with others, you know, I hopefully try to remove self, right? And so to be in a program that constantly thinks about self, it seems kind of funny. But, you know, that's exactly what it is. It is constantly evaluating myself on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. And it does get exhausting. And part of me was like, yeah, I agree. It's a pain in the ass. But that's unfortunately what it takes today. You know, I have a disease, the disease of self, and I'm aware of it. I spend a lot of my life unaware of it, or maybe aware of it, but not as aware or as aware of such a problem that it is, right? I just, you know, I'd been called selfish and stuff like that, but to understand my disease of a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility was an eye-opening, you know, moment for me. And the program and the steps, you know, teach me, you know, when you go to the first step, I admit I'm powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. And you know, the second step asks us to find a relationship with a higher power, the best that we can. And the third step is to turn our will and our lives over the care of a God of our understanding. And then we start getting into a moral inventory. And we start taking a hard look at ourselves. And, you know, it's tough. You know, when you come in or when I came in and when I started doing some of this stuff, I was like, yes, it's great. You know, I'm really doing some self-help, working on myself, looking at this. You know, I want to clean this up. I want to be a better human. But then you start really getting into it. And then it's like, my God. And then you do your fourth step and then a fifth step. And you have to share all of your darkest thoughts and, you know, character defects and all these things with another human being, right? And then we got to dig in and start looking at our character. And our character defects, right? And our shortcomings. And then we get into the making an amends. And then finally, you know, continue to take personal inventory, more self-searching, right? Continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, right? And then we get into the 11th step and then into the 12th step, which says, having had the spiritual awakening, you know, our job now is to be there for the next alcoholic. And it is a lot of self-searching. And I think that is the hardest part, right? I do, you know, it's funny because I was an alcoholic. I turned into an alcoholic when I came into the program. But what am I now that I don't drink, right? And I, you know, it's word salad, right? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've shared this before, but the first day that I came into the program, I stopped drinking, right? So how, if this is a program about alcohol and I'm not drinking it, how do I stay interested, right? How do I keep focused? Because, you know, my biggest problem was that freaking putting the alcohol in my mouth every day. If I'm not doing that anymore, where's the motivation, right? And, you know, I I've read that, the chapter, and where it talks about the different kinds of alcoholics, but I tell you, the person that my friend that is going through this is another level. Like, I cannot, there's nothing I can do to help her, and it's really sad. I don't, whatever number she is on the alcohol list, but she is a person, when she starts drinking, she literally just doesn't stop. And I'm like, just go to sleep, right? Just go to bed. Maybe if you just freaking go to sleep, maybe you'll, you know, wake up sober enough that you can try to stop. But I don't even know. And it's sad. It's really sad, especially because I'm good friends with her mom. And her mom asked me, you know, what I can do. And I just, there's nothing I can do, right? There is, you know, I live a sober life. I try to be a sober example. I try to be a person who was down at the bottom. And through, you know, putting drinking down and working these 12 steps, my life has improved 100 times fold. I try to use that as an example. You know, this is a person that, when I first met her, she had an amazing career. She was well thought of. You know, people seeked her out. If you needed your hair done or certain things, you know, this girl knew what she was doing. And today she has no clients. She's lost all of her clients. And it's heartbreaking. And, but yeah, it was interesting to go to that meeting and you know, to hear about a couple of people say they are the real alcoholic, because, you know, my disease immediately was like, well, maybe you're not really the real alcoholic. Maybe I'm not the real alcoholic. But see, for me, it sort of had to change the definition of what an alcoholic is. And as much of an alcoholic as I am, I identify as a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility, which means that this is a spiritual malady for me, right? This is about, you know, there's too much self. So I have a bad superior cord in my head. I have too many devils and not enough angels. And over time, I've been able to balance it out and work it out. But, you know, maybe I wasn't as bad as I thought, you know. But that's, you know, that is exactly what this disease does. And that's why I absolutely think it's a spiritual malady, not just a bad habit. Because those angels and devils never stop chatting. And you know, a buddy of mine spoke last night, and he said, and he's probably got 10 years, 8, 9, 10 years. And he was like, you know, I just didn't feel like coming to this meeting tonight. You know, my life is good. What he shared is exactly what happened to me, right? Not in the same sort of way, but the same idea that, you know, look how good I've done. Look how good I'm doing. Do I need to still come to these meetings? And but he's also another example of what a lot of people do is they come in, you know, like when I came into this program, I had nothing. I didn't have any friends, right? I barely had a job. I barely had a place to live. And when I came to the program, I started to meet people. I started to make friends. I started to build relationships with people and have good times, right? I started, for at least for that hour, you know, when I first came to the program, I was going to a meeting every day. Why not, right? I would go to two meetings a day if I could because I had no life. And, you know, so when I came into the program, I replaced whatever life I had with the program. And, you know, like I shared this last night, you know, the third step is a great, the third step in meetings are to me a lot alike because, you know, the third step says we, you know, we turn our will and our lives over the care of a God of our understanding, right? We started to make better choices, right? And we ended up having better actions, which started to reflect in our life, right? Like I've said before, I have a decision-making problem, right? Before every drink, every bad thing I've ever done, I had a choice. And that sick version of me made bad choices. And the third step started giving me an opportunity to make better choices. Instead of choosing to do what I used to do, let's try something different. And in turn, the action would be my, you know, I would either, you know, be in a meeting or working towards getting sober, whereas before I'd be, you know, working towards not being sober and all the pain that came with that. So when I started working to the left and started trying to make better choices, and in turn it started reflecting my life got better. And that's what I think meetings are about because, you know, I also, before I came into the program, you know, I lived a crummy life. I sort of hung out with crummy people and in turn, you know, crummy outcomes. And it would be hard for a guy like me living that sort of life to somehow just flip on a dime, right, and start to be a better person. And that's what I feel like these meetings are great for because, you know, I could come out of that world, walk through the door, be greeted by somebody in the program, you know, with a hug or a handshake, have a cup of coffee, sit down, listen to normal people chatting, and, you know, walk out of there and feel like, okay, maybe I was slightly part of that, right? And maybe for the first few meetings I would go to, and then I would go back home to that other world. But the funny thing is that other world doesn't enjoy me participating in this new world. And so, you know, I started going to these meetings, and then all of a sudden, those people from that other world started to drop away, right? And they started getting replaced by my buddy Tim, right? By my buddy James, by my buddy Scott, by my buddy Rick. All of these new people started to come into my life, and it sort of forced the old ones out. I don't think they knew it, but, you know, those devils that they were carrying did not want to be part of any of that. And so I slowly, through these meetings and through these steps, I started to replace the old people with new people, old experiences with new experiences, that old existence of no hope with a new existence of hope. And, you know, I feel like going to meetings is what transformed me or transitioned me into, slowly, right, into this new world, you know. And I remember, you know, for hooking up with that group of guys, you know, and we started doing a men's breakfast, right? Then we started taking meetings into Ellendale, which was a rehab. And then we started taking meetings into the jail as a group. I was definitely not doing that before, right? And so it was just a nice transition into a better world, just like the third step is a nice transition into a better type of thinking. And but, you know, these are all just things that I think every human should be given the opportunity to have, right? My problem is that if I didn't, my future was not good, right? My future was not good. I was heading down a terrible path, and I don't know what the end would have looked like, but I was really afraid, and it was worth me putting the effort in. But a person, some people just don't have that fear, right? They don't have that worry. They're not afraid of losing everything, and that's sort of like my friend. I don't feel like she's very concerned about anything. She's not concerned in the least that she has lost all of her clients. And she was actually doing really well. I might have even shared, you know, she was doing well, coming to work, doing what she was supposed to do. And went to a Christmas party, and that's all she wrote. And I think she's gone. I don't think she's coming back to the where we work. And it's just heartbreaking, man. I just can't. I'm like, why? Get your shit together. And I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, my buddy's sharing that he was getting sick of going to these meetings. You know, I totally can relate. And, you know, I've said this before. Meetings suck. I think they suck. I don't want to go. And, you know, this is not, you know, if meetings are better than what you're doing at home, it's probably more of a social event. And like I was sort of sharing just now, you know, transitioning into that new world, you know, it's great. We get into it and we start to live it, but it does become a little monotonous, right? And, you know, for me, like I said, man, meetings suck. I'd rather be at home, but this is the burden that I have to bear. This is the cross that I have to bear. And I go to 3 meetings a week. I don't like it. Gets annoying. I hear the same shit. I've read the same shit. I've said the same shit. I'm tired of hearing myself. You know, I start picking at the leaders. I pick at the secretaries. You know, I get sick of the way the meetings are run, yada, yada, yada. And I just build up a giant pile of ammunition when I want to start trying to when the disease wants me to start separating myself from this program. And, you know, I remember early on, if you come to a meeting and there's somebody in the meeting you do not like, you should sit next to them, right? If there is a meeting that you don't like, you should go to it twice a week. If there's, you know, something that you don't like, you should focus on it, right? Because, you know, these things come up. And the monotony of going to meetings, especially when you're in your 10th year, it gets old. And we start pointing out shit and start questioning why we're even here and saying I wasn't really that bad. And, you know, I celebrated my anniversary the other day, and I shared, I go, you know, because I celebrated 16 years, and I, you know, I shared in the meeting, I go, 16 years is great, but that's 16 years from the time or the moment that made me come into this program, right? Because whatever it was 16 years ago, it was bad, right? It was a real tough spot in my life. And I needed to make a change, and I reached out and got involved and was definitely, you know, excited about it. 100%, you know, go, go, go. But 16 years later, and I forget, right? Those memories aren't as strong. And the good thing for me is that I went through this. I went through it in Eastern Maryland, right? When I drank after almost 5 years, it was not because I was hanging out in bars. It wasn't because I was sniffing whiskey. It was because I did not like the way they collected the money at a meeting. And people laugh at me. I went to one night I shared that, and this guy, he laughed about that. And he even made fun of me in another meeting about that. But I'm going to tell you, it's very real. You know, it's not because I want to go to a bar. It's not because I want to go to parties. It's because I don't like the way the meetings are run. And I don't like, you know, whether it's the way the money's collected or which way the door's facing. But I remember I didn't like the way they collected the money. And I had a voice, intuition, right? A gut feeling that said, we'll find a different meeting. And I never did. And by the end of the week, I was hiding bottles of vodka. And it's just that cunning and baffling. And so I guess my message today is that, you know, for me at least, I had to transition from the guy that just was so excited, right? Look at me, my God, I've only dreamt of this life. And, you know, getting caught up in all the hoopla and the excitement. And unfortunately, it starts to fade. And the other thing is, you know, you make friends in this program and then they fade too. You know, they drop off. And then the next, you know, Billy's not coming, right? Or Jack's not coming. And then, you know, then I start feeling like I shouldn't show up either. And but these things come along and we just have to hang in there. That's why that 12th step, you know, having had the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, our job now is to be there for the next alcoholic. The, you know, the program, Bill and Bob, they said, this time will come where you will feel like going to meetings isn't as important. Maybe it isn't as necessary. Maybe the voice is telling you you've heard everything you're going to hear and you've learned everything you're going to learn and you're good. And that's fine. Maybe you have. Maybe you have learned everything you're going to learn. But now your job is to continue to come and be there for the next alcoholic. Because I tell you, when I walked into the program, there was somebody there for me. And so those guys knew that eventually, you know, the disease would tell us that it wasn't important. And they had to remind us, hey, you still need to be there for the next alcoholic. So as healthy as you get, right, as cured as you get, you still have to show up. And when I came back from my episode, actually when I came back, and I've shared this before we had the pandemic, I was feeling a little cynical and then when they took the meetings away for a couple of years, and when I finally came back and was at that first meeting and tears were coming out of my eyes, I said, I'm never, ever, ever going to take advantage of this again or not treat it with the importance that I need to treat it with, because this program saved my life. And hopefully it will save others. But I don't know if it's going to save my friend. You know, I could see her absolutely dying. In fact, every day I wonder if I'm going to get a call that she passed, because it's just really bad. So anyway, yeah, this podcast is sort of the same way. You know, I've been wanting to do the podcast and, you know, I haven't found any reasons not to. And, you know, whether people listen to this podcast or not, it helps me because I get to kind of share out some feelings I'm having, some thoughts. And, you know, I have people that reach out and say they really enjoy it, and that makes it even worse, right? Because then I'm like, oh, this is going to have to be better than the last one, right? And so it's all freaking mental fuck. And, you know, so I have to just be careful and just keep pressing on, ignore the noise, keep ignoring it, just keep showing up, and hopefully it'll all work out, right? All right, let me read the Daily Reflections. Hopefully we can maybe get back into some regularity. I always say that, I know, but it is, yeah. All right, Daily Reflections. Let's see what we got here today. Oh, it is Saturday. I'm off tomorrow. The other thing, man, the holidays are tough because it just never can quite get settled in. And the kids being home, it's just been chaotic. And so I'm off tomorrow. I finally have a day off without some sort of event. And then I think I'm off Monday, which is nice. So, yeah, hopefully get back in some regularity. All right, January the 4th. Begin where you are. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 19. It's usually pretty easy for me to be pleasant to the people in AA setting. While I'm working to stay sober, I'm celebrating with my fellow AAs our common release from the hell of drinking. It's often not hard to spread glad tidings to my old and new friends in the program. At home or at work, though, it can be a different story. It is in situations arising in both of those areas that the little day-to-day frustrations are most evident, and where it can be tough to smile or reach out with a kind word or an attentive ear. It is outside of the AA rooms that I face the real test of the effectiveness of my walk through AA's 12 steps. Yeah, you know, I shared this the other day. If I think when I shared up at my anniversary, you know, it turns out like whether it's religion, right, or AA or anything like this, you know, I think the outcome is that the program really just wants us to be very, very good people. And that means privately and publicly. And I think the privately part is the hardest part. And, you know, I always laugh because you'll hear people that talk about, you know, we'll break our arm holding the door for somebody, but then we'll run them over in the parking lot. And sometimes that's exactly how this program can go. So we just need to be better publicly and privately. All right. Hey, thanks for letting me share. I'll catch you later. Bye-bye.